A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Third and final hour. No Texas game on Sunday. Still, bad feelings abound after that awful performance against the New York Jets in Thursday night football. The final score not nearly indicative of how one-sided that game was, especially in the second half. And you also had a Jet player forget to bring the ball into the end zone, which I still can't believe happened. But hey, we are closer and closer to resetting once again and saying, hey, guess what? The Houston Texans are 0-0, and the Detroit Lions, who are 7-1, actually, they're 0-0 before this Sunday night football game at NRG Stadium.
They are. They're also 0-0.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just there yet.
We're not just there yet. You are 0-2 with turning your microphone on today.
Oh, I did it again.
You did it again. See, this is middle management, Joe. It's just the dramatic changes.
I've just been so focused on this damn squirrel and just trying to figure out how much money I'm going to donate to this GoFundMe page.
Don't use Peanut's death as an excuse for you becoming big time here. Middle management, Joe, Sean Mapes behind the glass. You're expecting him to turn on your microphone.
Honestly, didn't realize that was the second time it happened.
Oh, yeah. It's happened a couple of times today, dude.
Gotta be better.
Cross the T's.
Gotta be better.
You're 0-0 now, though.
I'm 0-0 now.
You're 0-0 for segments begun.
56 minutes.
With your microphone
yeah,
on.
56 minutes to change the narrative.
I got 3 segments to get it right.
You got 3 more opportunities to do literally the easiest thing ever that, weirdly, a bunch of people in this industry refuse to do. I don't understand how people refuse to turn on their microphones.
And then they get annoyed. The worst as a producer was that when they would get annoyed that their mic wasn't on fast enough.
It's bizarre.
Well, you have a button.
Turn it on.
Yeah, when they, like, stare at it. It's like, you can the thing you're staring at, you can just hit it.
Just press the button. Yeah, I don't get it. I know a couple of people that do it. I would tell them that to their face as well. Whatever. Hey, I know the Houston Texans are struggling right now, but you know what? There is something that could get them back on track. We learned about it in an article that our friend DJ Bien-Aimé wrote for ESPN.com. Now, sadly, this has not aged very well, but DJ did write a fun feature piece for the Four Letter Network about a group chat that the Houston Texans have. Now, I don't know what the content of this group chat has been of late. I don't know if it's been flooded with the kind of bleep posts that you would see on Facebook, especially with a presidential election tomorrow. But whatever the case, the Houston Texans wide receiver group has a group chat. You want to hear about it a little bit?
I do.
Okay. The idea started during C.J. Stroud's 2-year stint as a starter at Ohio State. His receiver group contained 4 future first-round picks: Marvin Harrison Jr., Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Jackson Smith.
Okay. Njigba.
Njigba. I always struggle with that one. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mad Dog.
I didn't get it wrong that time. Instead of texting, they communicated on Snapchat. I'm going to raise my hand for a second. Why are you communicating on Snapchat? What are you sending to each other that you might not want to have, I don't know, staying around? Because personally, I would want the messages to remain there. When I communicate on Snapchat, which is very rare, I forget very often half of what I have said.
Oh, yeah.
This is the thing with Snapchat. Snapchat, the chats disappear. And I'm sure that it goes to some database somewhere that actually collects everything that has been said. But the whole point of Snapchat is that you can send something, and that's it. It's gone. Is it for security, for safety, for nudes? I don't know. All I know is that's what the Ohio State wide receiver corps was using to communicate with each other. And I don't think that the Texans are using Snapchat, but it's weird to have a group chat that's on Snapchat.
I'm in one.
You are? Is this just a thing that the youths do, Joe George?
I don't know. It's a fantasy baseball league I joined that my buddy runs, and they communicate with Snapchat.
It's kind of like the Ohio State wide receiver room.
And I don't quite understand why. Because, like, then they get all mad, like, when people haven't paid their dues.
Well, yeah, that's normal.
Well, I'm like, yeah, but you sent the message, but then the message vanished. So if I didn't see it, like, or I just don't remember, because to your point, like, it's just gone. Like, I don't know.
It's
strange. It's the only reason why I still have Snapchat.
For fantasy draft or a fantasy league, it's an insane thing to do.
Well, how about for a wide receiver group?
I think for a group of friends, it's pretty normal.
Well, but it's a wide receiver group. And this Snapchat, this group chat, is not just about just camaraderie. It's about C.J. Stroud sending out random clips of film and saying, hey, this will work. That's what he's been doing. Apparently, he's kind of a psycho with this stuff. A big difference from year one to year two of the Houston Texans team group chat is the addition of Stephon Diggs, but also this. As a rookie, C.J. Stroud would text at all times of day. But in year two, Stroud tries to send most of his messages before it gets too late at night. This year, I've been a little early bird. I'm getting a little more rest this year, Stroud told ESPN with a smirk. Last year, I was a night owl. I'm learning to get my rest now. Maybe he needs less rest. Maybe he needs to be sending these messages out all night. Yeah.
Maybe he needs to be like the Yusei. No, Yusei Kikuchi was the opposite. He slept.
Yusei slept
time.
For 14 hours.
Yeah,
yes.
we need CJ to sleep less.
Yeah, because he's clearly got to make his offensive linemen aware of the many things that they're not doing correctly.
I mean, maybe it is something where it's like, listen, I'd be up all night sending clips to them. I would never sleep.
I actually wonder, based off of this article, it does seem like it's just about the wide receivers, but I kind of wish that C.J. Stroud was including the offensive lineman in this group chat.
Just circle him in.
Right. Now, we can ask DJ about the specifics of this, any details that maybe aren't in the article, but I did not see whether or not it's just for the wide receivers. I know at Ohio State it was just for the receivers. So Stroud's doing a lot of things. He's trying to build team chemistry, and I like all this stuff, but this group chat is not helping. The group chat's not helping, so we need to do something else to fix the Texans' offensive line and the wide receivers not being able to get separation.
Okay, I find it weird. Also, it took this long to like implement. Like, he did this at Ohio State. That was a while ago. He didn't start the group chat until after week two. Like, that's when the group chat started, it looks like. What took so long? Like, what was he doing last year? Sending emails? What about, you know, I assume.
Well, he did it in year one.
Oh, did he do it in
year one? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. He's just evolved
from year one to year
two.
Do you think that he makes people buy iPhones? If they don't have
you
one.
Can't deal with the green text?
I just feel like it would make it more awkward.
I'm guessing this is a group chat, that it could be on WhatsApp, and it also could be on something like, what's the other one that's
GroupMe?
Called? GroupMe. Yeah.
I like GroupMe. It works pretty well. But I do like this, like, how actively involved he is. And it should be all the time.
The guy clearly cares, and it seems like he actually gets his teammates to a similar level and actually gets a little more out of them because he's just constantly looking at things online.
Yeah.
I wish that there was some way that this could affect the offensive line, though, because like Stroud's clearly putting in the work. And I'm wondering who's not putting in the work here. Because I heard this, Sean, on the way in today to the studio at the very end of Dell's show. Dell played this clip from C.J. Stroud's press conference. This was on Thursday after the loss of the Jets, correct? Here is C.J. Stroud.
I would say, you know, he's got to honestly just play football better, execute better, stop pointing the finger and realize, you know, at the end of the day, like, this is not winning football and we can't keep squeezing our way by every game. You know, we are a really good football team. We have a lot of really good football players. Once we buy into the systems and what is being, you know, coached, and also we got to be able to have leadership to take over. So, you know, I believe, you know, this isn't the end, but this is definitely a great wake-up call for us.
What do you think he's talking about with the following things? First off, he said pointing a finger. Who's pointing a finger? Who's pointing a finger?
I mean, I'll go with what we talked a little bit on Friday when we heard the Titus Howard quote that we mentioned earlier about, you know, we just have to do our job. It always sounds like the tackles on this team try to make it clear that they're doing their job. And they're doing it. What about the other guys? It's like finger pointing kind of feels like it starts up front.
It's a different kind of finger pointing, but I think you're right there, Joe. He also asks, are guys buying into the system? So does that mean that there are some people that are looking at what Bobby Slowik's doing and are saying, this doesn't work?
Yeah.
That's
I'm hoping that's like a cliche. Like, he doesn't mean that. Because it is a cliche we hear all the time. Like, you just got to buy in. You got to buy into what we're doing as a team. Here at this point in the season, it definitely feels like to what you're saying.
I wonder who it would be, but I mean, the only group I can feel that I can honestly guess is perhaps not 100% buying in would be the offensive line, just given the many issues that they have on a weekly basis. And the fact that what you were saying, too, where there seems to be a little bit of pushback and sensitivity to the idea that they're not playing that well. And this is something that is happening. I've seen animated conversations that have been had between offensive linemen that are and reporters that are not me in the locker room. And there does seem to be this weird disconnect between the result that the offensive line is putting out on the field and what these players think is actually happening out there. And the last thing that you heard there, leadership needs to step in here. Well, I mean, Stroud's leadership. So are there other guys who aren't being leaders? And once again, who are we logically pointing at on an offense that has a lot of young players and two very highly paid tackles?
I mean, if it's a leadership thing, it starts and it ends with CJ, and he would probably tell you, like, in more detail, like, the same exact thing. He's the captain of this football team. He's the quarterback. Like, if there's guys not buying in, like, he has to be part of the reason why they buy in. It definitely the Thursday game just felt so different, just like the demeanor afterwards, because they've just been giving us this all this nonsense. It was the first time we've heard accountability, finger pointing, buy in, leadership, not acceptable, embarrassing. Like, those are all words we heard on Thursday night for the first time all season. We've been saying them, but the players, the coaches have been not. And that's what's why it could have been coming up before. I mean, these tackles are not available to the media. They are when they're winning games. They are.
It's weird. And do you know what the trick is? I'm pretty sure this is how it's going. Laremy Tunsil's just taking a really long time to get dressed at the locker room. And since there's this uncomfortability from the NFL Players Association about interviewing players when they're not ready to go, people are just waiting for him to get dressed. And he just doesn't. He just like kind of hangs out like and not all
just
the way ready to go.
Just filibusters?
That's what it seems like to me. Like, again, neutral observer, I'm not meat watching. I'm just wondering, hey, why people are like, well, stand near waiting to like stand around in a circle. And it just the conversations just never happen. Meanwhile, he talks with specific reporters and he does it for a little bit of time. That's what's happening.
Interesting.
For those who care.
Well, I mean, it'd be nice if like you could get like, I don't want them to like publicly like crush each other of like it's Kenyon Green's fault that we're this bad. Especially when your quarterback gets sacked 8 times. It's not one player's fault. Like, it's everyone's fault.
It was everyone playing left guard. Like, it was everyone on the interior.
Yeah, like, it's your right guard, it's your center, it's your right tackle, it's your left tackle. Like, they're all not playing well. And, like they're just not – it's not playing – they're not working well as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to buy in now. Whatever these changes are, even if they're not actual changes, like, if there's just what they're doing in practice, like, instead of, like, guys being benched out, like, they just – looks like they just added another no-name guard. So I guess this is the plan.
Okay. So we'll tell you who that other no-name guard is that they added in. And reaction to some of the things that D'Amico Ryans has said at today's press conference, it does not sound like a lock that a key Houston Texan will be back on Sunday. Galan and George, he's Joe and Paul. Sean behind the glass. Stay put.
You're listening to Galant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Galant and Joe George.
D'Amico Ryans met with the media, still speaking with them, I believe, and weighed in on a couple of things that are pressing on the minds of Texans fans everywhere. When asked about who will start at left guard, D'Amico said this, with Kenyon Green out for the year with a dislocated shoulder, quote, "We'll see who steps up. We'll see who goes out there and gets the job done."
All right. See who it is. Should be Titus Howard at left guard and Blake Fisher at right tackle. Shouldn't be that complicated if you're going to make a trade, but Kendrick Green, come on down. Who's the guy from earlier?
Brevin Jordan.
Nope. Cameron. Brevin Cameron. The guard they signed?
Carver.
Okay,
Brevin?
Carville?
Where'd you get Brevin?
I don't know.
Now I truly don't remember his name because you just
you just flooded the market with so many names.
With so many names, and I'm pretty sure none of them were even close to correct. James Carville? No, he's a politician, I think, right? Or something? I don't know. Political pundit?
James... I don't know.
Let's just keep on throwing out names that honestly aren't going to make a difference.
I remember the picture was him in college, and you said that should tell you how much he plays.
they signed former Patriots, Bears, and Chiefs center guard Jerome Carvin. Sorry, Jerome.
Carvin.
Sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Carvin. Sorry to the entire Carvin family. It is not our fault that we can't remember his name. We're two idiots and a third behind the glasses, Sean. Like, we just have small brains, can't remember anything. It's fine. It's fine. We're all taking this L as a team, okay? We couldn't remember his name. But as far as actual changes on the offensive line, D'Amico Ryan said, everyone can play better, though look at what they can do throughout the week. By the way, as far as Nico Collins returning, Nico Collins not definitively back for Sunday's game against the Lions, said D'Amico about Collins today. We'll continue to evaluate Nico throughout the week and see where he is. Two players have been activated, Jeffrey Okuda, defensive end Jerry Hughes. So a corner and a defensive end, they have been activated. They can return to the active roster within the next 21 days. So there you go.
The Nico Collins part is not surprising. It's a hamstring. Like, I know, like, whenever anything's on track, like, haven't the Astros taught us anything at this point? Like when we're talking about soft tissue injuries and guys are on track and recovering well, they're never back when you think they're actually going to be. It just never seems to work that way. So, not surprised that it's not a certain, one way or the other, that Nico Collins might not play this weekend. As long like he needs to get back as soon as possible.
Yeah, if you don't have him back, you're losing.
Yeah,
I'm just but saying it now. He's not back, they lose. I don't see how this offense gets any better on a short on a long week, you know, without some sort of major addition made on the interior offensive line. You need to bring in talent. And if you don't have Nico Collins back for this game, while the Lions are supposedly about to trade for Za'Darius Smith, I don't know if that's been finalized, but it was on Sunday reported that in the next 24 to 48 hours, they're going to have another pass rusher in the fold after losing Aiden Hutchinson for the year. What are you doing? And the Lions are clearly the belle of the ball in the NFC, and they realize that. But you still have a chance in this conference where I don't think anyone has really like taken the top spot in the AFC and run with it. The Chiefs are undefeated, but none of their wins have been impressive. They play the Bucs tonight. We'll see if this is the first one that changes with all the Bucs injuries that they're dealing with. The Ravens have had some impressive weeks this year, but it has not been consistent week to week. And you've also seen with, I mean, they just lost to effing Jameis Winston. And as far as the Bills go, it's the same kind of deal. Like, they barely beat the Dolphins on Sunday. I guess these Dolphins actually have a pulse now that Tua is back on the field, but it's wide open. And you need to add in help, and I think you're very unlikely to find that help that's going to be able to step in and fix things in the offseason. So aren't you going to do something about it now? Can you do something about it now? Your pro scouting's department, they should be doing that. And while I'm not going to get mad if they don't make a trade for a wide receiver, as has been reported by Diana Russini, that the Texans are not expected to add a receiver, I will be disappointed if they do not bring in some sort of offensive lineman, and I'm sorry to a guy whose name I just keep on forgetting. James of the Jungle. I don't know. James...
Carvin.
Jerome Carvin. God, I don't know how I'm getting James. I don't know how I'm getting Carville.
And then they also just signed... let's see this guy's name.
I forgot. You said they brought in another guy. That sounds...
Tremaine...
Yeah.
Antrim. Antrim.
Okay.
Junior to the practice squad.
Championship.
He played for a Super Bowl. He was on the Rams when they won the Super Bowl.
Okay. Did he play for the Rams when they won the Super Bowl 3 years ago?
It says he has played for Super Bowl winner with Rams, played collegiately for Clemson.
Cool.
Kind of feels like they just signed two of the same guys. And I guess this is what D'Amico Ryans means when we see whoever steps up.
Different shades of orange in college, yeah.
Yeah.
Just Carvin was a Tennessee player. Now you got a Clemson guy.
Kind of best of luck kind of a move here at guard. Like, now, and what's important, too, is the Texans have Texans Cap on Twitter posted this. The Texans have 36 minutes, probably less because our clock's usually wrong, to any salary restructuring that they're going to do to help them at the deadline has to be done by 3 o'clock.
Okay.
So if there is a restructuring of Tytus Howard or Laremy Tunsil's contract to free up immediate cap space, it has to get done in the next 30 minutes. And if it does not get done, I guess they actually only have $5 million in cap space, it looks like. So they really don't have much wiggle room right now, meaning they're probably doing nothing. at the deadline.
Okay.
Which that's a bummer.
It is a bummer.
They need help.
Where are they going to get it? Are they going to get it?
They're going to do it themselves, as D'Amico said. Whoever comes out on top.
Yeah.
Best of luck.
They got Carver. No. Carvin.
Jerome Carvin.
And they got Antrim. And got what they're doing is they're taking a pool cue, snapping it in half, throwing it to them, and Kendrick Green. Kendrick Green's also there. And says, hey, who's going to be the left guard?
A chance for aggressive expansion.
Yeah.
To quote Heath Ledger's Joker in The Dark Knight.
I would look at... Oh, sorry.
No, you're good.
I would look at Titus Howard's Twitter, but he deleted his Twitter account. Because it said right tackle only. He said he deleted Twitter.
He deleted a couple weeks ago, though.
Yeah. But I was going to look forward to see if it still said right tackle only.
Thursday night.
Or... Yeah, he's probably... You know. He's not beloved right now. It's not even his fault.
Titus Howard at left guard. He's not the left guard that...
The city needs.
The city needs. But he's the one that we deserve right now.
I think he might be the one they need right now.
Yeah, man. I mean, that really is the only fix I can think of. And it's not even like it goes well when he's there. But the pressure is so bad up the middle. You got to have somebody else in there. And, if I'm Titus, I might be volunteering to do it.
He should be. If he's a... He's better than Kenyon Green. That's all we're asking for right now. Is Kendrick Green one of these random practice squad guys plus Titus Howard at right tackle? Is that better or worse than Titus Howard at left guard and Blake Fisher at right tackle? That's the question. Like which combo is better for the Houston Texans? If Jared Patterson is the answer at left guard, because we haven't mentioned him, if he's healthy, then maybe it just solves the problem. But if he's not healthy, then they keep saying they have to, figure it out. Well, then try that again. But if Titus Howard's right tackle only, maybe they won't do it.
He's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. You want to weigh in on what the Houston Texans should do about their offensive line? You can. 713-780-3776 to call, to text. The NFL trade deadline is tomorrow. You can get after us on Twitter, at Gallant Says, at Joe George Radio, at Sean A. Mapes. Or on Twitch at ESPN 975, on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Stay there.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 975 and 925.
Astros made a move.
What we got?
Some outfield help.
Juan Soto?
Not quite.
Kyle Tucker extension?
Also, not quite.
Jason Hayward extension?
Also, not quite.
World Series, two-time World Series champion Jason Hayward.
No, but they did get American League champion outfielder Taylor Trammell from the New York Yankees.
Hmm. Oh, I know this guy. He's the guy who got the World Series ring even though he lost because he played for the Dodgers this year. So he got it. This is the guy. I know this name. He got a World Series ring no matter what team. That's the dumbest thing we do.
He played for both. Why is it dumb? He helped both of these teams make it
Jason
all the way
Hayward
to the promised land.
He deserve a World Series ring.
Why not?
He didn't play in the World Series.
Well, what about Taylor Trammell?
Nope. He lost the World Series. He definitely
But he played for both teams this year. What are you talking about?
But maybe that's what the Astros needed.
This is so disrespectful. The man is a winner.
It's true.
At least in theory, because he was a part of a winning operation. And he was part of a team that won almost enough to win a piece of hardware.
Piece of metal.
As called by Rob Manfred, yeah, yes.
Just a piece of metal.
So, yeah, the Astros did make a move.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, but what? That's a move?
Hot stove.
Oh, you're too good for Dana Brown bringing in depth in the outfield?
Yeah, come on.
I liked who they had in the outfield. I liked Trey Cabbage. He's now a member of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
How much did you like Trey Cabbage?
More than I don't know who this player is, so no. I like Trey Cabbage more.
I don't think you like Trey Cabbage.
Taylor Trammell.
No, I remember in the doldrums of the season, which was like May when they're 10 games under 500.
Sneaky like Trey Cabbage.
Yes, you for some reason saying that you sneaky like Trey Cabbage when he was like 2 for 10 as an Astro or something.
that dropped ball against the Angels.
I think it might have been like the week after the drop ball because I think I was like, didn't he drop a ball that he could have caught
Joe,
to win a game?
Joe took him at his absolute lowest.
Yeah.
Yeah. He bought the dip with Trey Cap.
He's not an Astro anymore. I'm out. So.
Oh, okay.
He's a Pirate.
Yeah, that's tough.
So moves have been made, and listen, if you're not happy with your Houston Astros making moves, then I don't know what to tell you. They're bolstering that outfield depth. We'll still wait and see what happens with Alex Bregman. I believe there's a pretty critical date coming up, right?
Qualifying offer is due at 4 o'clock today.
Okay.
So
nothing on that yet.
Yeah. A lot of times if you get that qualifying offer, the player usually ends up leaving in free agency.
More pressing deadline, the Texans getting an offensive lineman by tomorrow's trade deadline, which I think is 3 p.m., or by today at 4 p.m., the Astros extending a qualifying offer. No qualifying offer, as you said. Yeah, I do think that that's good, right?
Puff, I feel like most likely if they don't offer the qualifying offer, he's just going to sign a deal in the next hour and a half.
Hour and a half?
Well, because if you don't, you have to give it to him so you get some draft compensation.
So. Yeah, if you don't offer him the qualifying offer, what that would tell us from the outside looking in is that they feel good that they're going to sign him pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because if you don't then sign him quickly and he actually goes to free agency.
You don't get anything for
him. You don't get anything for him.
Definitely the Texans is more pressing because we have 99 days until pitchers and catchers report.
Well, that's pretty urgent, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Bryce Harper didn't sign his contract until like February when he did it. So
yeah, after pitchers and catchers reported.
Yeah.
That's when Blake Snell finally signed.
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
That's when Josh Hader finally signed.
That's when Jordan Montgomery finally signed.
Mm-hmm.
It all worked out perfectly for all those guys.
Yeah, Jordan Montgomery told
all those guys had an awesome year.
For the most part, Hader did. He just some bad moments.
And Harper, too. Harper, too. The other Boris people? Not so well.
The Montgomery one makes me laugh because that's the guy who, like, his owner of the Diamondbacks, was like, this is a terrible move.
We signed this guy.
And then he opted back into his contract this weekend,
yeah,
which made me laugh.
Of course. Hey, the owner said he overpaid me. Of course I'm going to.
Of course I'm staying for $22 million. Like, yeah, I'm not leaving.
We're hearing from the New Orleans Saints after Dennis Allen was fired today, and they got some big words. Foster Moreau said this about his Saints, who have lost 7 in a row. This city deserves winners. These are bleeping tough people. And I'm not going to apologize for swearing. They've been through a hell of a lot. And they deserve to watch sports teams who lay it on the line and come out with wins.
That's really mean to say about LSU. He's not wrong, but they're terrible. They made the worst mistake you can make. They gave a really bad quarterback a lot of money. And they let him pick his head coach. And like, I don't really know where you go from here for the Saints, besides John Gruden. Like, if you're stuck with Derek Carr, I don't know what all the other move is.
The interesting thing with Derek Carr has been a back and forth between him and former Saints wide receiver Michael Thomas, who is not on the Saints, right?
He's a free agent.
He's a free agent. I thought so. So Michael Thomas, in the midst of yesterday's Saints-Panthers game, saw Derek Carr throw a pass to Chris Olave over the middle of the field. Olave got smoked and had to leave the game in one of those backboard situations. He got carted off. I do think it's important to realize that the guy who hit Chris Olave is Panther safety Xavier Woods, who is one of the most penalized players in the league since 2018. He got a penalty for unnecessary roughness, but it's the 9th unnecessary roughness penalty that he's had in his career, plus 2 horse collars and a face mask. 20 total penalties for 275 yards thus far. So this guy's a bit of a headhunter.
The hitman.
But Michael Thomas, I guess, is of the belief that Derek Carr set up Chris Olave for that. And he tweeted out all of these things in tweets that I'm sure have been deleted. Guard Mike. Oh, he left them up.
Oh, they're still there. I was just looking through them.
Okay.
For that reason.
Here is what he tweeted about Derek Carr. Derek Carr, for you, I've been told, y'all bleep, sad, crying emoji, middle finger emoji. Dude, scary and panic and just throw the ball. Get him the F out of here. He's so ass. That year, his buddy went first-team All-Pro in 2022. He needed 180 targets just to catch 100 passes. He is ass on my granny. Dude tried to lie and say I was jealous of them making Chris Wide receiver one whole time. God, don't say that. Starting from number one receiver leader target. Whole time he can't even get him a decent ball. He need his ass whooped. They fired all them coaches trying to cover his flaws up. He's still doing the same bleep. Derek Carr, for his part, was asked about this after the game. We have Derek Carr's response, which I felt was very professional. Here is the, for now, starting quarterback of the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, I mean, your reaction. You know, I have love for Mike, you know. You know, and when he does that, I don't really care for it, obviously. You know, I've had so many teammates over the years, and he's like the one dude that didn't get along with me, you know. And I don't know what I did to him. I don't know why he feels that way. I'm sorry, you know, for whatever he's dealing with to make him feel like he's got to do that. I don't know, you know. But he's never called me during any of this, you know. My phone number has never changed. I've in fact called him on different occasions, just to try. And sometimes you can try as hard as you want, and it just doesn't work out, and that's okay. So I don't know why he feels any type of way. I didn't see it. I won't see it because I always ignore everything, you know, good and bad. I try to ignore everything. So it's unfortunate, especially coming from a player like that. But I wish him the best. I hope he gets on the team and does what he wants to do and loves it. You know, I'll never change. Like, I love him in that way, wish him the best. But as something I just would never do to a teammate, you know, because.
Yeah, that wasn't Carr's fault. I get it. That guy's a headhunter, though, on the Panthers. And I do think it's interesting that Carr brought up that, like, he's tried to reach out to Thomas, and Thomas has his number, and Thomas hasn't done it. Thomas is clearly unwilling to do it because Thomas wasn't done. Thomas is apparently driving around New Orleans and just asking random people on the street how they feel about Derek Carr, for example.
Tell me about Derek Carr, man.
I don't like that shit.
You don't like him?
I don't like him, man.
What's wrong with him?
He doesn't know how to play. Always keep the ball like this.
Man, that's crazy, you know that.
Yeah.
You smart. You get my respect. I gotta show my dad this.
You better trade the quarterback, man.
Yeah, trade him?
Yeah.
All right.
Not seen there is that random person on the street imitating Derek Carr in the pocket. It was pretty funny. So that's what Michael Thomas is doing right now. Is there a sliver of truth to what Thomas is saying here? I mean, clearly, Carr's not what he used to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bad ball. Like, he definitely put Olave in danger, for sure. I mean, it's a headhunter, yes, but, like, it is a bad ball. He is a pretty inaccurate quarterback. I also hear a guy that, like, I'm just, one thing I don't want to happen the next 24 hours after the Texans disappoint us and don't make any trades at the deadline is, like, don't go sign that guy. Cause, like, I just get, like, Antonio Brown vibes right now. And it's mostly from Derek Carr, like, what he said after the game. Cause I feel like I hear pity in his voice.
Pity.
Like, he feels bad for whatever's going on for him. Cause he's kind of says that in there, but, like, just sounds like someone that's, like, not doing great right now off the field.
No, he's going through it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it must really suck to realize you can't even make this team.
No, they're terrible, and they cut you.
Yeah, they cut him. He's probably done, I would assume, at this point, but he's also had a lot of questionable moments when it comes to him as a teammate. There are so many diva wide receivers out there, aren't there? He's Joe on Paul. It's Galan and George, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. You want to jump in, 713-780-3776 to call, to text. We saw an all-time exchange between a prominent sports star and a media member this weekend. In fact, it was violent. Very violent. Was this guy in the right? Plus some garbage time. It's Galan and George. Stay put.
This is Galant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Paul and Joe inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Last chance to dance, Galant and George. Joe did turn on his microphone for this segment. Congratulations.
A real look at me move to do it, so we give him credit for it.
Right.
Congrats.
It's as if he was doing it in a way that implies Sean should have done it for him.
No.
Mr. Big Shot over here.
No comment.
He wanted us all to praise him for
turning on his mic. No, that's what Sean saw.
Thank you, Joe.
I'm going to get punched.
Thank you, Mr. George.
Easy.
From the 832, we have somebody saying that I guess it was Derek Carr throwing a hospital ball that got Chris Olave hurt. This might be Michael Thomas himself. Everyone has been saying it's Carr's fault. Are you blind? Stick to being mediocre at flag and radio. Well, I mean, this is what I'm doing right now, being mediocre at the radio as I speak in this very moment.
Yeah, even if it's a hospital ball, like, it's still a headhunter shot on Olave. And it's still an absolutely unhinged series of tweets from Michael Thomas.
Yeah, the guy's been penalized a bazillion times. Yeah,
all things can be true at once.
Yes. But this idea that it was done with intent, that's what Thomas was implying.
Yeah.
That is crazy. Anyway, whatever the case. Joel Embiid. It's been an interesting offseason for Embiid. And you might remember his hits from the offseason, like, yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to play in every single game this year. That goes over great in a city like Philadelphia. A couple of days ago, at a media availability, Embiid had this to say about the way that he is discussed in Philly.
You know, when I, you know, see people saying he doesn't want to play, I've been way too much. I've done way too much, you know, for this city, and, you know, putting myself at risk, you know, for people to be saying that. So I do think it's bullshit. Like that dude, he's not here. Marcus, whatever his name is. I've done way too much for this city to be treated like this. So done way too much. But like I said, I wish I was as lucky as other ones, but that doesn't mean that I'm not trying and, you know, I'm not, you know, doing whatever it takes to be out there, which I'm going to be.
So, an article was written by Philadelphia Inquirer columnist Marcus Hayes after this incident, and it was released. And at the very beginning of this article, in a lead that has widely been panned to the point where they actually changed this, Hayes wrote this, quote, "Joel Embiid consistently points to the birth of his son, Arthur, as the major inflection point in his basketball career. He often says that he wants to be great, to leave a legacy for the boy named after his little brother, who tragically died in an automobile accident when Embiid was in his first year as a 76er. Second paragraph. Well, in order to be great at your job, you first have to show up for work. Embiid has been great at just the opposite. Now in his 11th season, he consistently has been in poor condition. This poor conditioning apparently seems to have delayed his debut this season. Embiid won't play in the opener or the next two games." So I guess things escalated to the point where over the weekend, Embiid shoved this reporter.
And at first we thought it was a punch.
Correct.
But then it was corrected by the people who tweeted, and from the locker room it was a punch. Changed it.
You also had 76ers security asking media members not to report on the incident, to which Joel Embiid, I guess, said, report whatever you want over all of that. But, yeah, Joel Embiid shoved a reporter. You can say I suck. You can say whatever you want about me as a player. Don't ever put my dead brother's name in your mouth. See you on the right here.
Yes. Joel Embiid? Absolutely. Should punch him in the face. That's stupid. This is like this. That's not what this job is. And honestly, Joel Embiid, if I was him today personally, I would demand a trade. Apparently, Daryl Morey and Elton Brand are defending this reporter.
Really?
And they said they apologized for the incident, expressed regret that it happened, asked for his version of events, Marcus Hayes's. They agree that Embiid's actions were unacceptable. Wrong. Like, I get your point of the article, but like, you're going to bring up this dude's dead brother and his son. Like, yeah, you deserve to get punched in the face. Sorry.
It's a bizarre line. No matter what, does it justify violence? honestly, I don't know. I don't know what does and what doesn't. It does feel like every now and then someone does need to be punched. And there are some times where, you know, I even wonder about, hey, am I just talking about this in a way that is respectful enough where I would feel comfortable saying it in this person's face? I don't know if I always feel that way. But this is ridiculous to bring that up. Like, he's trying to set a good example for his son named after his dead brother. And he's not. Like, that's basically what he said in that article.
Yeah,
it's like, because whoa.
Because he's missing the first three games of a season. Like, that at the end of the day, we're talking about missing the first handful of games of an NBA season. Guess what? There's going to be 75 more of these suckers. Like, I don't know what you're...
It's very personal.
Yeah, it's unnecessary. It's, like, such an unnecessary...
You could just say he's out of shape and not at the start of the year. We've said this a million times. Like, you don't need to bring up, like, setting an example. It's a bizarre one.
Yeah, it is crazy. It is funny that Philly had two of these situations in, what, 24 hours? Less than 24 hours? Did you see the Jason Kelce
yes.
spiking of the dude's phone? It was like a college kid, because I think it was at, like, a Penn State tailgate.
He was in State College, Pennsylvania, yeah. And those people are truly the worst.
Yes. Like, and, I mean,
one
and
pulled
so,
a switchblade on me once, for okay. those who don't know. So,
you get two... Philly athletes. I was going to say Philly heroes. Kelsey's a Philly hero.
For sure. He won a title.
Embiid, I think they like him still, but they're kind of they're on him. And both of them have justified incidents where normally if you just see the headline of Jason Kelce smashes a dude's phone at a tailgate, you're like, huh? What's going on? And then you see the video, you're like, no, that Jason Kelce actually handled himself pretty well there. And same thing with the Embiid thing. Because at first, it was like Embiid punched a reporter.
Yes, and then
and you're like,
and
whoa.
Then, yeah, because Keith Pompey sucks at his job. Like, he reported it was a punch. He's there. And then he edited the tweet.
Oh,
and then he started replying to people.
That's bad.
Saying it's a shove, not a punch. You tweeted it. Like,
yeah, he was the only guy who tweeted until Shams.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, at this point, like, I think people... In the media, that fan with Jason Kelce, like, people got way too comfortable with what they say to people in the media, to fans, I mean, you know, to players. Like, sometimes, like, you just deserve it a little bit. So, I'm team Joel Embiid forever on this one.
Forever? The original tweet from Keith
as
Pompey.
As a father.
As a father, yeah. The original tweet from Keith Pompey, oh boy, people will remember this season for all the wrong reasons. The team just dropped it. 1-4, and Joel Embiid punched a reporter in the locker room. He edited it to say assaulted a reporter in the locker room. Damage is done already. Then you have Shams Charania doing a damage control
honestly,
tweet afterwards. Yeah,
honestly, assaulted is just as bad.
Assaulted actually sounds way worse. Like, it sounds like multiple punches.
It's happened before. For those who don't know, this one's happened in Houston where Dan Pastorini, the Oilers quarterback, I believe got into it with Dale Robertson. Of the Houston Chronicle back in the day.
James Harden also, I think, broke, was it Moses Malone Jr.'s phone? Remember that story?
Oh, yeah.
Where he, like, threw it. Or, no.
Did he do it himself?
I think he threw, yeah, maybe it was his bodyguard
or something. It was his
guys.
Yeah, guy's,
yeah, but he, like, threw it on top of a roof or something. So they can't say that he destroyed it, but they just took his phone
That's
away.
That's what I like about the Jason Kelce move. Was that he threw the guy's phone and then he went back and grabbed it and left with it.
Yeah, he picked it
so
up.
So he tried
smashed
to,
on the
he
ground,
tried to
yeah.
take the evidence
yeah.
with him.
For those who don't know, Jason Kelce was, his brother was called a F-bomb, not that one, the other one, for dating Taylor Swift. Strange, whatever. Anyway, some garbage time before we wrap it up.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts. No.
Ah, I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
I'm surprised this doesn't happen more. Baseball, after an investigation, found a top prospect in the Dominican Republic who had verbally agreed to sign with the Padres for $4 million is 5 years older than previously believed.
So he's 19. I thought he was 14.
Interesting. I mean...
I feel like 14 versus... Like look at 14 versus 19. I feel like they're... maybe I'm wrong.
Listen, if it helped me get that...
I feel like you look different.
I have no problem with this guy faking his age. If it got me that kind of money, I would 100% lie that I was 14 years old
oh,
at age 19.
My question is more the people who signed him who didn't realize he was 19. Like, do you have eyes?
Well, I suppose it's hard. Some people are baby-faced. at age 19.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it's like, oh, maybe just hit puberty a little early.
Yeah.
And he looks young on the young side. Because I think physically that would be the biggest clue of is this a 14-year-old or a 19-year-old is just like how developed their body, like how like muscular they are.
It happens all the time.
It does happen a lot. Like it's one of those things where you always kind of feel bad, or maybe you don't feel bad, but you're always a little bit of like, are we really just going to keep making the like age jokes with Dominican and Cuban players? And then there's enough stories in real life that happen where you're like, yeah, I guess so. I guess we're just going to keep making these jokes.
The Dodgers had their World Series parade, and guess who won the parade? Shohei Ohtani's dog, Decoy.
Oh.
Dogs, bruh.
The best.
We don't deserve them.
Remember when people thought that his dog's name was Astro, and that meant he was going to sign with the Astros?
I don't remember that. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
It was a rumor floating out there on Reddit.
You know who didn't win the Dodgers World Series parade? The Dodgers fan who blew off his hands with a firework. And by the way, you can check that out online. There's a lot of video of it.
God, people are so stupid.
It's rather jarring. Really, what's interesting is after the guy blows off several of his fingers, he just starts walking around like he's in complete shock. He's just walking back and forth. It's like, hey, bud, you need a paper towel.
You would just think that like Jason Pierre-Paul would have taught us something.
Just don't play on fireworks.
Like, yeah, like, please stop.
It is a crazy video to watch.
Haven't watched it yet.
It's not that graphic.
Once I'm done freezing to death, I'll watch it.
It got tweeted as like graphic. Guy blows off
fingers. It was graphic.
It is graphic, but you don't see like, I don't know.
Yeah, because the fingers are gone. They're just gone forever. Smithereens. Anyway.
And you know who else is gone forever?
Peanut the squirrel.
Yeah, the squirrel.
And the raccoon whose
name. And Trey Cabbage.
Eludes me. And Trey Cabbage. It's been a rough day. But hey, guys, tomorrow is tomorrow when the Houston Texans will officially be 0-0 as they look onto the Detroit Lions. For Sean Mapes behind the glass, for Joe George, for our YouTubers, our Twitchers, our texters, and callers, I am merely Paul Gallant. So long, farewell, have yourselves a wonderful Monday. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace!
ESPN 97.5.